You are listening to Screenfish Radio. I'm your host, Steve Norton. This week on the show, we dive into the oasis of Steven Spielberg's latest film, Ready Player One. Immersing us in the digital world, Ready Player One is filled with pop culture references. But is it more than just a nostalgia fest? This week, Jeff Baker and Benjamin Porter join us to talk about the nature of identity and the relationship between creator and his creation. Welcome to the conversation. Welcome to Screenfish. Podcast. We are so excited this week to talk about Steven Spielberg's Ready Player One, the number one movie in the world, at least in its opening weekend. This week to talk about the film, we're so excited to have back Jeff Baker.
Hello.
Welcome back, Jeff, and our Screenfish newbie. I guess if you will, Benjamin Porter. Welcome, Benjamin.
Yeah, thank you. It's good to be here. I've been I'm looking forward to talking about this. It's good.
Great. Well, we're going to have some fun. The film is a fun film. Ready Player One is based on Ernest Cline's bestseller and takes place in the year 2045 with a world on the brink of chaos and collapse. But the people have found salvation in the Oasis, an expansive virtual reality universe created by James Halliday, played by Mark Rylance. Well, after his death, Halliday reveals that there is an Easter egg within the Oasis that whoever finds it gets control over the entire digital universe, inspiring everyone to look for it, including a young man named Wade Watts, played by Ty Sheridan, and they join the contest to face the challenges and try and find the Easter egg, if you will. And guys, I think, you know, you've both seen the film.
Well, we were supposed to watch the movie.
Well, if you haven't, it'll make it more interesting. So, I was going to say this is a spoiler-heavy podcast, but it won't be if you haven't seen the movie.
I've seen the trailer three times.
That's exciting.
And
that's
the Wikipedia.
Good. Thanks to Wikipedia, we're ready to go. But the theme of Easter eggs is a big one with this particular film. We know that since the film's come out, even on Friday, people have been scouring the film looking for references, pop culture references. I've seen some websites that have as many as 138 different films, TV shows, music, or songs from the 80s and 90s, just stuff like that. So I thought I'd play a little game to get us warmed up, talk about the film. I thought we'd do a bit of a pop culture quiz between the both of you. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to read you guys quotes not from Ready Player One, but from films that are referenced in Ready Player One. So we're gonna try you guys out.
Okay.
Ben's a little nervous.
As the newbie.
You don't have to be a newbie. You just have to be our age. That's all it is.
All right.
So let's start with you, Ben. Let's start with you. Okay. So remember, all you have to reference is the film that is referenced in Ready Player One, based on the quote. So, what film, and from what reference, do you hear? The way I see it, if you're going to build a time machine, why not do it with some style?
That's Back to the Future?
That is correct.
Oh, wow.
There you go.
All right.
There you go. I told you, I'd throw you a softball.
What was the guy's name? Doc?
Doc Brown.
Yeah.
And who is actually in the film. Not only is the DeLorean, which you see in the trailers in the film, Doc Brown does make an appearance right before he's obliterated in a video game.
That's right.
All right. Okay, Jeff.
All right.
Here's a hard one for you. It's really hard. When the Pirates of the Caribbean breaks down, the pirates don't eat the tourists.
Oh, Jurassic Park?
Jurassic Park.
Oh,
Jurassic
wow,
Park.
I would have got that.
Oh, man, Ben, you're in for a bumpy ride. You can't get that one. I threw you the easy ones.
I know.
Because, of course, the T-Rex yeah. chases him down in the first challenge. Ben, back to you.
Mm-hmm.
Things are going to get a little tougher now. I'm just warning you. What is the average carrying capacity of a swallow?
Oh, I don't know. What movie that is from? Let's say Terminator 2.
Terminator 2.
I have no idea. I have no idea.
I'm going to give Jeff the chance to steal. Yeah, steal
now, are we Jeff. Talking an unladen swallow?
An African or European, yeah, actually, yeah. Yes.
Okay, so it's Monty Python's The Holy
Grail. Holy Grail. Well done. Because, of course, the Holy Hand Grenade of Antioch.
Yes.
Was one of my favorite ones, actually, to make an appearance. Okay, well, I go to Jeff for this one. Yeah, I'm going back to Jeff. Okay, Jeff, so you get a chance to take a commanding lead.
Okay.
It's 2-1 for you. I say we take off and nuke the planet from space. It's the only way to be sure.
Ooh, I don't know. Alien?
I will give it was actually Aliens, but yes, the franchise. Okay. That's fine. The franchise, I'll give it to you because the chest burster makes an appearance in. Ben is looking, wondering what that is.
No, I sure, yes.
Ben, we've gone to see Ready Player One. I don't know if you have seen the film.
I clearly did not catch as much as you guys did.
Okay, all right, let's... Here you go. Here you go. Sure. All right, Ben, it's 3-1.
Yes.
You need to come back here. 1-2, Freddy's coming for you. 3-4, better lock the door. 5-6, grab your crucifix. 7-8, gonna stay up late. 9-10, never sleep again.
Well, Nightmare on Elm Street.
There you go. All right. If you didn't get that, I would have been disappointed. I was going to blank out the Freddy. But I took Freddy gets obliterated pretty quickly. So, okay. So, but he's in there. Yeah, in that battle scene. There. He is in there. Okay. So there we go. 3-2. 3-2. Okay. Right. You ready?
I'm ready.
This is actually, I'll give you this quote. Here you go. This is a hard one. Okay. This actually is a hard one. I don't care how liberated this world becomes. A man will always be judged by the amount of alcohol he can consume, and a woman will be impressed whether she likes it or not.
I have no idea. I'm going to say Buckaroo Banzai.
No, but a fascinating guess. Yeah, you've swung for the fences on that one.
No. I haven't seen Buckaroo Banzai. So.
Still better than Terminator 2 as a guess. Do you want to take a swing at it, Ben?
I'll say the quote again.
I don't care how liberated this world becomes, a man will always be judged by the amount of alcohol he can consume, and a woman will be impressed whether she likes it or not.
I don't know. I mean, it does kind of sound familiar, but I have no idea. Let's say Winter Soldier.
Still not as bad a guess as Terminator 2. No, that's from Cocktail.
Okay.
Cocktail, okay. Tom Cruise, 1988.
Yes. Okay.
The cocktail, the sign from his bar, Cocktails and Dreams, appears.
Yeah, I have seen it, but it was...
Yeah, that it's an old year, old movie.
That was the year that Tom Cruise both won an Oscar and a... what's the one for the worst movie?
He's never won an Oscar.
He's never won an Oscar?
Never won it. So,
or he was nominated for an Oscar, but he won the Razzie. No, not for Cocktail. Cocktail won the Razzie. Like,
I don't know. Born on the 4th of July, I think, was when he was. Was that the same year? I don't know.
Maybe, or it might have been Top Gun. Did Top Gun...
We don't fact check here on this show, so I have no idea. Okay, that's fair. Still, 3-2. 3-2. Ben, it's your question. Okay, sure. Here's your chance to tie it up. You ready? Here we go. Tell me something, Billy. How come a cute little guy like this can turn into 1,000 ugly monsters?
You know it, don't you?
I do.
I don't know. I don't know. It's not Billy Madison.
What? Billy Madison?
I don't know. I don't know.
I'll give you a hint. You don't feed them after midnight.
Oh, really?
Oh, really?
Really?
It's like it's like he expected that you could feed them after midnight in that quote.
I could be wrong, but I could be wrong still on this. But the only thing that's coming to mind is Gremlins.
There it is.
Is it
Gremlins?
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
The wooden box, I believe, is the wooden box that Gizmo is given to. All right.
Right.
3-3. All right.
Oh, wow.
There it is.
Is
here
it
is.
Really a tie?
It's really a tie. You know, we taught. No.
This is real. It's that movie.
This is you got tossed an easy one there from the cheap seats.
Well,
but
I appreciate Jeff. That really is Jeff's.
Despite your shock. All right. Okay. Here we go. This is it. This is your chance to put it away. Your chance to put it away, Jeff. Okay. It's not so much a quote as it is a conversation. Okay. So there's three quotes. I'll be back. Ha! You didn't know I was going to say that, did you? That's what you always say. I do.
Terminator 2.
You are wrong, but you're closer than you realize. Okay.
Can you read it one more time? This actually does sound familiar.
Okay.
To me.
I'll be back. Ha! You didn't know I was going to say that, did you? That's what you always say. I do.
This is some teeny bopper movie. I know this. Maybe not. I don't know. I'm not sure. You still don't know, Jeff? Can you give us an era? 90s?
I'll give you a better clue than that. It is a Schwarzenegger film. In the 90s.
Twins? Kindergarten Cop? All his greatest.
Is it?
I'll throw it out. If anybody
it must
can
be
get
a
it.
Comedy, though.
Is it The Last Action Hero?
It is Last Action Hero.
Of course,
well done.
Of course.
Well done. That is true.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, Macaulay Culkin.
You've not seen that movie.
Last Action Hero?
Macaulay Culkin is not in Last Action Hero.
What movie did they do together? Didn't they do a movie together?
Unless he went over to his house for dinner, I don't think they've ever done a film together.
Okay.
Austin O'Brien is the young man. Austin O'Brien.
Okay.
But now I'm
another
desperate to see a Schwarzenegger and Macaulay Culkin film.
You might be thinking
of Terminator 2 because the kid kind of looks like Macaulay Culkin.
Well, yes. Yeah. I'm thinking there's a Macaulay Culkin movie after Home Alone and all of that he has the longer hair, mid-90s. I can't remember what it was, but I guess he's with some other adult. And I guess it wasn't Schwarzenegger. But it would have been in that era, I think.
That falls into the shut sounding, up and take my money factor.
It's sounding familiar, but I'm not.
There's no. I'm okay. We're pausing this right now. I'm Googling this.
Sure.
Macaulay Culkin. There's no movie.
No, it's not even. I googled Macaulay Culkin action movie, and it's not even. There's lots of.
Although I will say this, You know what, Ben? After having looked it up, I will say, in the August 27th, 1993 article in Entertainment Weekly, it is quoted that Macaulay Culkin is the Arnold Schwarzenegger of kids' movies.
Oh, that must be what I was thinking.
So that must be what you're referring to.
It could also be, like, Home Alone is essentially Die Hard for kids. So
right.
Maybe that's what
you're thinking. Yeah, that's right.
I'm already very much enjoying this podcast. I can't wait to talk about Ready Player One with you guys. Oh, my goodness. Well, let's transition. I mean, that was a close battle. Closer than I expected at the outset.
I gave him a hint. I could have
you did. Jeff, you did. You could have taken that. It's appropriate you won that, I think. But what did you guys think of Ready Player One? As a film, what did you guys think of Ready Player One? Ben, let's start with you.
Oh, what didn't I think, Steve?
I don't know. I mean, let's start with what you did think, and we'll build from there.
Well, from the trailer, I thought.
the quality of this podcast. Thank you for listening. We do appreciate it.
I really enjoyed it, actually.
Hmm.
I watched it twice.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, surprisingly. Yeah, I wanted to be ready, which I'm probably not still for this. But I thought Spielberg. I went in not realizing it was a Spielberg film.
Really?
Yeah, until the end. Until the end. And but when I saw his name at the end, it made sense, like the adventure side of it. And I think he does such a great job with piecing that together. To me, there was a shock between the Oasis world, the animation world, and the future of real life Earth. And I'm sure that's how he wanted it to be. He wanted it to be Earth was run down and everybody wanted to go to the Oasis because that was, you know, beautiful. And I think that kind of changed by the end. But for me, it was jarring, you know, to go from essentially perfection and doing anything you want and your hair perfect and whatever and all the dreaminess of it to, you know, rain clouds and pollution and so on. So I think it kind of made me uncomfortable with maybe with the direction of where we're going with if this could be possible in the future. I don't know. I thought that was interesting. I thought that this could be something that we could see in the future is I see that as possible. I would love to have your guys' take on it. But in general, I thought it was a very fun movie. I thought the story was put together well. I thought, for me, it comes down to the actors and the characters. And I thought the guy who played Holiday, whoever that was excellent. I thought he did a great job.
Mark Rylance.
Yeah, I thought Mark did a great job, my friend Mark. And I never realized it was going to have that much pop culture references. Going into it, I thought it was going to be more of a futuristic world that you could do whatever you want. But to bring in, especially as far back as the 80s, but I mean, it does make sense, the connection to the Easter eggs and so on. But I, for somebody in our age bracket, I guess, I really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed the adventure of it all. So.
Yeah, I thought it was really well done. I'm a huge fan of the book, and it was very
different. Oh, you've read the book?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So it's very different from the book. I mean, not very different. It's like the same basic premise, but they just changed a lot. But I've stopped going to movies expecting it to be like the book because...
Right.
I kind of figure... I don't even know why people do movies based on books anymore when we're living in the age of the Netflix miniseries. Like, yeah. It's so much more likely to do justice to a book over 8 episodes than it is to do it over a 2-hour movie. But I thought it was really good. It was lots of fun. I was kind of distracted at the beginning because I was sitting in front of Jagmeet Singh from the NDP party.
With all the pop culture references, what distracted you was sitting behind the NDP party leader.
Yes.
Okay.
He was a wower too. He kept going, whoa. But,
and yeah. One of our most dedicated listeners. No,
biggest fans.
And then I thought, I mean, I've been trained by Marvel movies to stay through the credits, but I thought if any movie would have an Easter egg at the end of it, surely it would be the movie about Easter eggs. But I was a little disappointed there. But no, I thought overall it was a really fun movie. I was thoroughly entertained by it, and yeah.
Yeah, I felt it was a lot of fun. I think that it's been a long time since I've said that about a Spielberg film. Mm. Even, you know, when he's doing BFG and all that. BFG. Like, the films he's done, this felt more like a throwback to his Amblin years. When the Amblin logo came up, I thought it was really appropriate this time. Not that he uses Amblin for everything, but in this case, it felt closer to that style. I didn't love the last chase scene. That sounds really petty, but I thought that they built up so much, and I thought it was just sort of like they were bumping each other on the road, and I thought it would be bigger. So there are some things at the end I was like, eh, okay. But on the whole, I had a lot of fun. The big question for me going in was, I know that as someone who's years old, the pop
63 years old?
No. I knew the pop culture references were going to, like, that's what everybody's talking about, right? So there's that thing, and oh, there's that thing. But I wanted to know, you know, how the movie would stand up without those things, you know? Like, is the movie more than a bunch of pop culture references? And I will say this, I respect Spielberg for not going in from... Now, I haven't read the book. From what I hear is the book is just filled with Spielberg references.
A lot of it, yeah.
And he said, I didn't want to do that because I didn't want it to play out like my greatest hits.
Yeah.
So I think the only Spielberg films, although he may have produced... I think he produced Gremlins. I think the only official ones was Jurassic Park and he produced Back to the Future. Mm-hmm. Although I did read that there's a rumor that the book that Schindler's List is based on is in his apartment. that it was in there, and they're not sure. And I don't know whether it made it past the cutting room floor, but they apparently the cast and crew was begging him, you know, put more stuff in.
Yeah.
And he didn't want to do it. He just wanted to do all, like, keep it. I give him credit for that, because he could have just said, look at what I've done.
Sure.
This movie is an homage to me.
Yeah, exactly. He could have done that. But I thought that I love the tone of the film, the just fun adventure. You know what I want to ask you guys? I was thinking about this, too, is this film echoes The Matrix in a number of ways, but it seems different.
It's like the reverse Matrix.
I was wondering, how do you, like, because that's 20 years old now.
Yeah.
And, of course, this is a bit of a cautionary tale. You could make that argument. I think we'll talk about that a little bit. But Matrix was, like, all about, like, a cautionary tale before we got to that point. So how do you think that they compare, not compare like the quality of the film, but together the stories? How do they differ? How are they the same?
Wow.
Both sort of quasi-messiah stories. Wade Watts is definitely like he's the one who figures it all out kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And he's sort of even been with the name Wade Watts, it's almost like he's been born. Like, his dad named him that because it reminded him of a superhero's alter ego, right?
Yeah. So
it's like, he's sort of destined to be the main character of a story. But I think, whereas The Matrix was all about setting people free from the illusion, this was about sort of embracing the illusion but making it better.
Hmm.
So, like, because they don't shut down... they don't shut down the Oasis at the end. Spoilers.
That's okay. We're all about spoilers. Should have said that at the beginning.
They don't shut down the Oasis at the end of the movie. Well, they close it down on Tuesdays and Thursdays so that people can actually exist in the real world. But they just seek to make it like a better place to hang out. And that's their whole purpose. That's the whole purpose of the movie, is that the Sixers and Nolan Sorrento are trying to get to the Easter egg first so that they can... like maximize the amount of ads users see in their screen of field before inducing a seizure kind of thing. And so they're trying to do it from a corporate perspective, and everyone else is sort of seeking it so that they can keep it this thing that they love.
Mm.
It's almost more about net neutrality than The Matrix.
And interesting. Yeah. Yeah.
I thought, The Matrix humanity was controlled somewhat, right? They were plugged in and the robots were in charge in the real world. And in this, I think that they touched on a little bit of that control through the Sorrento piece, is it the one-to-one, or what was the...
101. IOI.
Through IOI, and because of the loyalty centers.
Mm.
I mean, he was bridging on slavery, right, and control. So knowing that if he was doing it at that point, that if he did win the Easter egg and become the owner of this whole thing, what freaks me out is that's only steps away from not just more promotion and marketing and ads and so on, but in controlling people to do whatever his will is,
controlling
people to do more ads or build bombs or whatever he's looking to do. So I think in a way he Sorrento kind of represents a little bit of that robotic matrix controlling piece, you know, in the human sense, you know, the evil heart of it. I thought, Steve, you said the ending could have been bigger. But at the end of the day, like, when I stepped back and thought about this, because I thought about it as this could be possible in 50 years.
Right, you know? Right.
But, I mean, our companies, and maybe I'm a little bit naive, but, I mean, maybe I am just naive on this, but, I mean, for a CEO to go out with guns chasing down 16, 18-year-olds or whatever.
Right.
And on broad daylight is pretty... cocky, you know, at best. Like, is he, like, you'd think you'd have to be a world dictator, you know, or a country dictator to even have the guts to be able to do that, but I don't know. It's interesting, anyway, what it takes, I guess, to save your own skin if it was a make or break deal for them as well on Sorrento's side. So,
and in some ways, he really sort of is the ruler of his own country. I agree with you guys. One of the things I was amazed at is that in 99 we were terrified of the machines being in charge. Now we dive in.
Yeah.
Now, you know, this is, in fact, they prefer it.
Yeah.
You know, and it's funny because the world sucks in the Matrix too.
Yeah.
They've just forgotten because they've been asleep, right?
Yeah.
But here the world sucks, so they're running away.
Mm-hmm.
And even the use of pop, like pop culture in the way that it does, it's candy.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, oh, this is fun to be here. All these things we can do. Oh, the more time I can spend, he gets the suit. Right. And I thought, man, that's interesting because as a culture, like, this doesn't feel so far out of the realm of possibility anymore. And, it, you know, 2045 is 25 years from now.
Yeah.
But, you know, Spielberg has a tendency to do that. I remember when Minority Report came out, a lot of times when you see these movies, they portray the future as this impossible thing. But when Minority Report came out, it just felt like further along.
Yeah.
Like, those are the ads, they read your eyes, and they're customized ads. Well, what do we have now on our laptops? Customized ads, you know. They're tracking our, I was going to say thoughts, but that's not what I mean. We're not, you know, our searches. Mm-hmm. And we give our personal information, this whole thing with Facebook.
Well, yeah, well, like, when the Facebook thing came out, I was kind of like, or even a few years back when it was like, oh, like the NSA is like watching everything you do on the internet. I'm like, of course they are.
Yeah.
Like, of course Facebook has this data on you. Like, what do you? You are the product. You're not the consumer in this situation. You're the product. So of course, like, who's surprised by this? But so I don't know. Sorry, that's off track.
No, it isn't at all. I think that makes total sense because there is that knowledge, right?
Yeah.
It's interesting when you think about, and I hope we can get into a little bit of the AI and Elon Musk and these guys, this world, you know, because I feel like that's a part of this in a way. But it's interesting that Holiday at the end, though he was the one that built it, was the one, well, two things. On one side, he's saying reality is still the best place you can get a good meal, or whatever the quote is, right?
Yeah.
Which actually makes you think, you know, as much as you can live inside this thing, this virtual reality, you still, food and like, you know, sight and sound and taste and feel, all of that is going to be more genuine and pure and real in real life.
Yeah.
Which you're not going to get fully, even if you have all your armor and all that sensory stuff, but... But then on the flip side of that, the question that Wade asks is, are you dead? Hmm. And he says, yes. And he said, well, how are you here? And he smirks and walks away. So it's like he put the whole idea of people putting his soul or his being or his intellect or whatever you want to call into this thing. So he's living forever. So he's signing over everything so he can just be.
Yeah.
Which I know there's people out there toying with that technology. You know, there's billion-dollar companies toying with the idea of how can you live forever. Just the idea that reality still has the best stake and nothing here is going to have that, yet his whole soul is in this virtual reality.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. It's just things to think about. I just thought that there was some depth to the film that would have made you think about where we're going as a world species, you know, with technology.
One thing I was thinking of is, and I love Spielberg, I wondered what the film would have been like if it was made by someone in their 30s.
Because
Spielberg is in his 70s. I think he's 72 or something like that. He's in his early 70s, I think. But my thought was maybe, you know, the tone of the film, the things you're talking about, like, well, you can still get the best steak. It's sort of, the tone of the film I felt was sort of like, well, of course it is. Oh, I just forgot.
Right.
But I wondered if maybe if it was somebody younger, it would almost be more of a discovery.
Mm.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Yeah.
It would be like, whoa, the steak is better.
Right.
You know,
right,
in terms of questions asked. What's going through my mind is how would it differ made by somebody who wouldn't already go in with, well, of course the real world is better.
Well, and in that mindset, in some ways, I think Spielberg is Holiday. You know, I think maybe that was what Spielberg being a grandfather or being, you know, an older person that's still cutting edge. You know, he's making it from that perspective that, yes, the 80s were great and I contributed a lot to pop culture, but relationships in reality, when I die and films get old, I mean, that still outweighs. Where you're right, somebody that is brought up on the phone or on the internet from day one might have a completely different sense, which is freaky in a way.
Yeah, I think, like somebody younger, I think, would have also... I think you're onto something when you say Spielberg is Halliday, because I think somebody younger would have made it more from the, not that the movie wasn't from the perspective of Wade, but in the sense of like, they wouldn't have been old enough to remember games like Adventure or or Centipede or something like that, like all the games that are referenced.
Battletoads, man.
Yeah,
the Battletoads are in that.
Like, who would, nobody knows. Impossible.
Oh my gosh.
How can you get past level 3 on Battletoads? but like, so like, yeah, so like the other day I made some like deep cut reference to the Flipper theme song, and my father-in-law was like, how do you even know what that is? And I was kind of like, I'm like, well, I'm timeless when it comes to pop culture. And so like Wade very much is that, is like he has all this knowledge about things like Buckaroo Banzai, which I know, but like all these movies like John Hughes, that like this guy was born he hasn't been born yet in the real world.
Yeah.
So how does he know, have all this information on, like in the book he knows like this, the secret to scoring the most points on Pac-Man is a glitch in the game where you can't actually, it's the same as like the adventure thing, you don't actually beat the game to get the Easter egg, you have to do this other thing. And so like, well, how do you know that? Or that like games made after X such a date I'll have this. And like he has all this knowledge, he's timeless when it comes to pop culture because of his knowledge of Halliday. And so I think somebody younger would have been making it from that perspective of like being like, yeah, I have this appreciation for all of this stuff, but I only have this appreciation because someone else has already appreciated it, kind of thing.
Well, that's you know, thinking of this idea, one of my favorite quotes in the film is, people come to the Oasis for the things they can do, but they stay for the things they can be.
Mm-hmm.
What do you guys think about that? Do you think, how does that ring true, or does it?
Oh, I think it does ring true, and I think it doesn't just ring true in this film or with the Oasis. I think it kind of just rings true in who we are, going into Facebook or into other social media or the internet or just the clothing we choose. Or, you know, I think it rings true to the music we listen to. It's an identity where we go in because of the fun, the allure, the cool factor, because other people are doing it, or the social. But then it becomes part of, you customize it and make it part of your identity, which I think is probably a bit dangerous.
Mm.
From a Christian worldview, obviously, you're putting a lot of your hopes and dreams into something so shallow, you know, and you're only going to come out with depression on the other side, right? Mm-hmm. When all of that... I mean, people in the movie were successful businessmen and lost all their money in this world and were ready to kill themselves.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, that's right, because a guy tries to dive out the window, yeah.
You know, and other people in the real world had to save him from that. But, I mean, that's his identity was so tied up into whatever magic armor that he just lost that he was willing to end it all. That was worth more. He just spent years getting that. And as much as that... is there, Halliday doesn't really address that other than the fact of, well, maybe we should just, you know, get to know each other in the real world a bit more.
Yeah.
Like, he doesn't address the reality of people are losing all their money identity or jobs, or they're not going to school or doing anything in the real world because
they don't go to job or to school in this.
Well, that's the other thing. Yeah, so they don't, like, what is this? Like, is it just robots do everything and then they can play out in this video game?
That was one of the
things
that I thought they was missing from the book, was they go to school in the book, but they go to school in the Oasis. And so why poor people have computers, is because they're government mandated so that you can go to school. So that when he's being like, I want to turn all the schools into like Ridgemont High or whatever.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. That's right. They do reference that.
Yeah. So it was. Yeah. So, but that was one of the things that was kind of like that reference doesn't make any sense without knowing that
that context.
But also at the end when they're all watching. Mm-hmm. The outcome, right? There's kids with screens in front of them in rows in a classroom. That's what it looked like. So it looked like, so is that in the real world or is that a...
That's a Breakfast Club. That's a detention room from the Breakfast Club.
So, but is that, so that's not in the real world. That's kids in...
Yeah, so that would have been kids in the Oasis watching.
See, the lines are so blurry now, right? Lines are so blurry.
And especially when Sorrento, it was ingenious, the depth that they brought in. I give Spielberg that it wasn't just, you know, a fairy tale. You know, they did bring in some trippy stuff where Sorrento thought he was in the real world but was still in the Oasis.
When they fake him out.
You know, so just things like that I thought were... That was quite intriguing. That... So why... Going back to your question then, why isn't the Oasis just a better version of the real world?
Yeah.
It isn't. People would rather be a six-arm monster with pink hair. Like, it's interesting. You know, because they could have been.
Six arms, man. What are you going to do with that? You don't need that many. For sure. Yeah.
But
six is overkill. Yeah.
So, I don't know. It just, because it seemed like you could be in the Oasis, and it'd just be more like the Matrix, more like a real world.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. Still working with youth, and I love it. Actually, we're doing this youth podcast on Marvel movies, and it's funny because a lot of them are too young to remember the very first ones. Like, they hadn't seen Iron Man because they're too young. Talk about pop culture references. But one of the things I've been noticing over the last decade and a half is how, I guess it's not just me, but anyway, like, how quickly we have been willing to sacrifice physical body from identity. And anyway, it's because identity is formed, how you mentioned how you dress, but that's really what's that is other than an avatar.
Yeah. Sure.
And it's a heck of a lot cheaper to change your digital appearance, to change your Instagram profile, to do all that, than to keep up with the latest clothing trends, right? It is, and you can connect, quote unquote, connect with more people anywhere.
Yeah.
And their false identity, people, sometimes they say they're more themselves. You hear teens say that I'm more myself online than in person. Yeah. Because identity's been totally separated from, you know, what we're doing right now. It's easier for us. There's something about physical space that scares us as a culture now. And that's one thing with that quote. Sure, they go there to do these amazing things like play games and all this stuff. And that's why it rang so true for me, is this idea of they can be anybody and not just change their identity. They can, you know, like, well, H. Mm-hmm. H is a 6.5 or 7 foot android human cyborg, but it's, you know, this young girl who, you know, when they meet, she's like, well, I guess I'm not what you were expecting.
Yeah.
You know, because it didn't matter but he trusts her because of her digital self. He has no reason to trust her.
Yeah.
But what's interesting, that what plays through in that is when they bring up a few different times that you don't really know who they are and so on, and it plays off of the, you know, the creepers on the internet. But the idea that, at least in this movie, the idea that their real personality came through.
That's true. That's very real, true.
So he knew that was Helen or H. Not because of male, female, or because of look or whatever, but because of the personality.
That's true, yeah.
And what's interesting is he fell in love with Artemis. Because, again, of the personality. Mm-hmm. I mean, there is the assumption, I guess, that he's assuming that she is a female. But what he's falling in love with is the soul of the person.
That's true.
In there. And she's trying to say, you don't know me. But he's saying, I do. I do know you on a deeper level. Just I might not know the name or your hair color or whatever. But so it's just some of that is interesting. So when you're saying from youth ministry, from young people, they feel more free to be themselves. I see that as maybe that's a healthier thing, that they're not being this. Maybe this is a world that there isn't as much bullying, or I don't know. But at the same time, it's not genuine because it's not fully you. Who you look like and your real name, and you know, you're still hiding. So it is, it's a bit of a paradox.
I think what it is the it's, you feel more yourself, but it's the attributes that you're comfortable with
sharing.
Yeah, it's, that's what it is. It's like,
I guess that's true. Yeah,
it's like, yeah, I'm trying to think of a good way to put it, but like, it's, you feel more yourself because it's the yourself that you're more okay accepting.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And so I think, like, because in many ways, like, I think, like, when, like, I don't want to say old people, but when old people say stuff like all kids today don't know how to be social, I'm like, actually, kids are being more social
right.
than has ever been possible in the history of the world. We just don't understand the lengths of their ability to be social. But then at the same time, yeah, it's like, because we have this anonymity online, we have this ability to sort of create our own personas and alter your Instagram profile to be however you want. You could Photoshop yourself so that, like, you can take a picture of yourself with, like, plain clothes, and you can make yourself look like a goth or, mm-hmm. like, whatever you want to be, like a rock star or anything, because of Photoshop. So it's the things that we're comfortable putting forward, but it's the things that, like, when you're in an actual relationship with somebody, that you need to sort of overcome. Like, we all have faults that we're not putting forward.
I will say this. I liked, and this, again, going back to the Matrix, this is the anti-Matrix. They didn't demonize the Oasis.
Yeah.
They took a break from it. They said Tuesdays, Thursdays is going to be off. But that means it's on the other 5 days of the week. It's not like they said, we'll leave it on the weekends. You know, the majority of the week still on the Oasis. That's fine.
Mm-hmm.
As long as you understand that, you know, as they say, well, reality is, well, you know, real. Mm-hmm. I think he says a couple of times in that film. And I actually appreciated that because it could have gone that route and said, you know, the Oasis is the problem. But the problem wasn't the Oasis. It was people trying to how they were using it.
Yeah.
One thing I wanted to talk about, too, is one of the key themes I felt in this film was the notion of the creator and his creation. There's a complicated relationship between the creator and the creation in this mm-hmm. particular film. I was wondering what you guys thought of that.
I think, for a large part, it was that Halliday had a vision in mind for what the Oasis, for what he wanted the Oasis to be. And the more it got into other people's hands, the more it altered from that vision. Hmm. And so almost the purpose of the Easter egg hunt was to bring it back to that original intention. Like the quote where he's like, why can't we just throw it in reverse and go full speed? Bill and Ted did it or whatever.
Yeah, yeah, I love that.
And and so like that's what he wants with it. And so like it's everything that you have to go through in the game is getting back to the core values of what he wanted the Oasis to be.
Mm.
And then I think, I was going to say something else, but I totally forget. So I'll pass it to Ben.
Thank you, Jeff.
It sounded like a high school presentation. And I'd like to pass it over to my partner, Ben.
For more on this, we go to Ben.
That's right.
All are in sports.
I'll be doing the next three slides. And then Q&A. No, it is interesting because it is a Holiday is a bit of a god in a way that built a world. He mm-hmm. created a world and people live in it. And not just live in it, but you know, as Sorrento says, it's the world's biggest economic resource.
Hmm.
So even the idea of shutting it down for 2 days, people are living in jobs and I guess in this, then it's interesting. But he was looked up to as a god, at least by kids like Wade that are willing to care about the Breakfast Club from 100 years ago to know so much about this guy because he created their world. And I think in that sense, it shows that humanity is looking, needing to look up to something, wanting a relationship with something greater or bigger. I think you see that kind of in our culture everywhere, you know, from people idolizing jobs or you know, Trump or Putin or whoever people look up to or trust, you know.
Why did you reference Trump and Putin?
I don't know.
That's people that they look up to and trust.
Let's erase all of that.
No, I'm keeping that.
No.
That's too good.
No. Okay, so, you know, people that look up to whoever they look up to over, you know, if it's political leaders or if it's
or the head of the NDP party. You know,
the head of the NDP party that Jeff was stalking there that night.
That's why he was actually in that theater.
That's why he was Jeff even willing to go see the movie.
It was just a happy accident. Like, oh, we're seeing this. Kills two birds with one stone.
That's right. So I do think that it shows that there is a relationship, and a need for a relationship between the created and the creator. So bringing that into a Christian worldview, the relationship between God and man, right? I mean, I think that is clear there. But just the idea that they could have a relationship with Holiday, if, you know, because he was a person that walked around and he filmed his whole life and they could interact and figure him out. And so really that library or that building of all his memories or whatever is a bit of a Bible.
Yeah.
Mm. You know, it's a bit of a...
Oh, you're right. I never thought of that, but yeah.
You know, just how did he think and why does he think it to understand who I am in this to accomplish the goal that he wants me to accomplish. It's still Holiday's goal.
Yeah.
So in a way, it's what is, to me, in real life, as somebody that follows Jesus and believes the Bible to be the Word of God, then we're, what is the Bible saying, and what is God speaking through Scripture to guide us to live our lives, and what is that, you know? And what's interesting is at the end of it, the idea of, you know, caring for each other and having relationships and spending time with each other is very much in the backbone and foundation to our relationship with God and our purpose of why we're here on the earth, you know?
And then I love how essentially they go through this purist revolution when Wade gets the keys to the Oasis, and the first thing he does is institute a Sabbath.
That's true.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
We're really going deep here.
Yeah,
today.
There we go. But the other thing I found interesting is the anti-rule thing, where Holiday said, I'm sick of rules and I don't want rules and let's just make it free and anybody can do anything, where I think that's a little bit, I know that's freedom and, you know.
Well, it's a cultural message.
It's a cultural message. But just from a biblical point of view or a creator point of view where we're coming from, I mean, God definitely puts rules to the game, right? Even in the garden, he put a rule. So,
But he also gives us free will.
He gives us free will, sure.
But going back to the, you know, you talk about the library. If you look at a character like Wade, Wade's the only person that invests his time getting to know the story of the creator. Mm. The other ones are playing in the digital playground, and he is too. But he invests his time trying to get to know him. Well, actually, you know, the thing I liked about this idea is that it felt like every character was somehow embedded with the creator in their very being. And I say that not because they said it necessarily, but they talk about the very first Easter egg, and they talk about adventure.
Yeah.
And the very first Easter egg is the name of the creator.
Mm.
Because the creator was so proud of what he had made that he embedded his name in the game itself. And that's one of the things I loved about this. It's the idea that okay, in some sense, Holiday has done that. He has done that. He has embedded his name throughout the game, and everybody knows about him, but not many people know him.
Mm.
One of the things I will say that the film is interesting, too, is they refer to the creator who hates his own creation.
Mm-hmm.
But the Oasis was not the creator. They think that's what he's talking about. He never hates his creation. He loves what he built.
Yeah.
He never regrets it. That's not the creation that he regrets. So I just thought it was such a fascinating. It's not like I want to say Halliday necessarily. He's not God, but in this film, he takes on a godlike role. Mm-hmm. And you talked about, you know, anybody can do whatever they want. Well, in some ways they can, but it's the one who gets the most out of the Oasis is Wade, who invests his time in the story of the Creator, which gives him the instructions to progress. They're all stuck, you know. And how great were the challenges? Just to go totally flat there. Yeah. Come on, man.
No, they were great. I mean, the car race right off the start was just amazing. Love that. I mean, that, and what a great way to kind of kickstart this whole thing to have. I mean, that's what blew my mind in the movie, I think, the most, was the idea. I mean, I love New York City. The idea that you're in New York and you have Kong right there. Right?
Yeah.
So you're not just in New York City. You're in the movie now. It's still a game. It's still.
Yeah.
And I mean, I don't understand how you can crash and burn and not hurt yourself in real life or whatever. I don't know. But I just thought, what a cool experience. Definitely.
And you see in those. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
I was going to say, it would have added like hours to the movie. But so in the book, when you get the key, you don't get the door. You get the key and you get a clue to the door. So that it was separate challenges. So it was even more like that. Like when you're just saying like how great were the challenges, Mike, and they were so, it was even better in the book. there's this whole extra layer to defining it is you get the challenge and then you have to figure out what the door is. And so there's this whole scene with like, he has to go through the walkthrough for the text-based game Zork. And like,
come on, though. Didn't a little part of you want that video game that he has to be E.T.?
Yes!
The Atari 2600 game. I wanted that game to be it because then they could have explained maybe what the heck, what's going on with that. That's what I mean is you look at Wade's relationship to those things. He's the only one that is able to navigate it, and it's because he knows the story.
Yeah. Well, and it's not about winning a challenge. It's about learning what life is about, you know. And so the idea of reversing the challenge and going backwards just the idea that he was trying to teach people that it's not about winning a game and winning a prize and money. He was really trying to teach people that to connect with each other and learn from his mistakes.
Yeah. Well, yeah, even, like, the last challenge is actually a test where he's like, sign this and the Oasis is yours. And he's like, this is wrong. This is the moment that you signed everything away. And like,
Well, yeah, because, I mean, what if he signed it? Then it would have said, no, you go back to the beginning? I don't, like, I don't So, but, yeah, I mean, it is a movie, I guess. But it is interesting that it went deeper, and it wasn't about the money.
No.
And it wasn't just about... And of course, the evil empire, that's all it was about money, and it was just playing the odds. Let's just have 1,000 workers running these games day and night, and we'll crack the code ahead of somebody just on the odds of it.
Yeah.
But they never could, because it was the thinking was completely backwards. It wasn't about playing the game. You're never going to win. So
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it wasn't about... Yeah, it was about... existing in the game instead of playing it, or instead of winning it.
Yeah.
Anybody who's listening is probably going to roll their eyes, but just to go a little deeper, your godlike character left his world in the hands of his small group of followers. So as he not ascended, but is mysteriously alive, but not alive. Anyway.
Well, if you want to go deeper than that, the godlike character hanging out with his younger self, you know, like,
oh my gosh,
like the father and son piece of this whole thing, you know.
This is what happens when you get pastors in this. Sometimes it doesn't go this direction, but you get pastors and missionaries.
But, it makes you wonder because you know that there must be people in Spielberg's frame of reference or in his team or him himself that, you know, a lot of these films are coming from some kind of biblical worldview or mindset, or
I think he's Jewish.
I think he's actually Jewish. So I just feel like there is some of that, if he means it or not. But I think the guys putting these movies together are going a lot deeper than we realize. Yeah. On like, because why else have his younger self there, or why else have him? You know, so it's just I thought it was incredibly smart how they tied in how you could live in a game, but also he's God, but also, you know, it was interesting. And the humility he had about not wanting to, because he could have just run it and been the evil empire himself.
Mm-hmm.
But he kind of gave it all up, you know, for his people. You know, yeah. What an Easter message this is now. But anyway.
Oh my gosh, you're right. last year at Easter we did Batman versus Superman.
Okay.
And I was like, I got so excited about that film because I was like, my gosh, he dies and they don't know what to do. And I saw it on Good Friday.
Yeah.
Holy crap. And I'm talking, and we did a podcast and they're like, what are you talking about? You're just rambling. I'm like, no, it's there.
Yeah.
This time I was like, oh, it's all about Easter eggs.
And then just like in Justice League, Jesus comes back and he's pissed.
Yeah.
I was thinking about cutting that part out. I'm keeping it in now. It's so good. Oh, man. Well, this seems like a good place for us to sort of wind down. We could talk forever, I think, but let's do screen it or skip it. Ready Player One, screen it or skip it.
I say screen it. I think it's going to be one of my new sick movies. Like when I feel sick, I'm going to pop it on and feel better because it's like mindless and fun, but also not mindless at the same time. Like it's dealing with some deep issues, but it's also just like a really fun movie.
Oh yeah, interesting. You said that. Okay, go on.
Yeah, I'd say the same thing. I think I would say screen it. Now, if I wasn't coming on this podcast, I might have waited for it to come on DVD or something. Right. You know. But no, I think, especially how it relates to real life and culture, yeah. I think you need to screen it just to make yourself think a little bit about where we are right now in 2018 or whatever. So I say screen it, and it is. It's just, I think it is a ton of fun.
Yeah. It was like a fun version of Black Mirror. It didn't make me
laugh. Oh, man. Black Mirror fans need this film more than they... It's not the movie they want, but it's the movie they need. Yeah, I like the way you guys described it. I think that they sold it for its pop culture references. I think it's far from his best film,
mm-hmm.
but it sure is a lot of fun, and it is his most fun movie in a long time.
Yeah.
I think it's worth a watch, and... I think this is one that you could go see in the theater. I kind of want to see it in IMAX, not because it's so amazing I have to see it in IMAX, but now I want to go and look at it.
Yeah.
I want to go. I went before willing to take in the references, but not really looking. Now that I've seen it, I want to go and enjoy the references, just go and watch them. So I think I said to a friend, I actually want to buy it on 4K so I can do the pause and play and look in the, because I think that now I want to really have fun. I like that you called it a sick movie because it kind of felt like that to me. It's like, it's light.
Yeah.
It is a light film that's enjoyable and a lot of fun. It's a ride. It's a theme park ride. Yeah. That's what it is.
Yeah,
and Spielberg
is.
Hasn't made a theme park ride in a long time.
Yeah.
So, I think it's definite screen it for me. This one is a lot of fun. Guys, thank you so much for coming on. This was a lot of fun. You can use this for shameless self-promotion if you want.
Do I dare?
You can if you want, Ben. How can our viewers connect with you?
Well, I'm on social media, I guess. You know, I don't live in it as much as some. I'm on Facebook. I'm the executive pastor of Willow Baptist Church at Yonge and Finch in Toronto, and that's where we're filming, right? Or that's where we're recording this right now. So thank you for meeting me here. So, yeah, if people want to reach out to me, Facebook or ben@willowdalebaptist.com, and it'd be great to connect.
Sure. Sweet. So I, through my art studio, Digital Art Space, I run faith-based workshops for youth and children and adults if they want. I'd love to do a superhero workshop with adults. That'd be cool. Anyway, you can check out, if that sounds interesting to you, www.digitalart.space/church. And you can get more information on the workshops that we do. Okay.
Sounds good. Sounds good. And for those of you at home, a reminder as well that you can always find us on screenfish.net. In fact, if you go to this podcast particular page, you can download Fishing for More, which is small group questions that you can have with people that you see the film with, so that you can try and engage the conversation a little deeper with them. As a podcast, you can find us on Google Play, iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, and Podomatic. And we will be back in 2 weeks with our next episode as we talk about A Quiet Place, which is... I lost my train of thought. So,
shockingly loud movie.
Shocking, yeah. Turn down your hearing aids. No. Which stars Emily Blunt and John Krasinski. I think it's actually directed by him. A bit of a horror film, so that's going to be very interesting for me, because I don't usually do horror films, so this will be wild, but I think it's going to be a lot of fun. So again, guys, thank you so much for coming on. It's been a lot of fun. And as always, we started the conversation. This was Screenfish.